So Min is out this week, so I'm running the show. So the first item is call the meeting to order and then review and approve the meeting minutes from July 19th. And I have a motion to approve.
I wasn't here, but it's minor. Changed my name spelled wrong.
Okay.
It's A-N instead of E-N.
Oh, okay.
Second motion?
Second motion.
All right. So item three, public comment.
I'm sorry, Joel. So yeah. All in favor, we need to get.
All in favor?
Yeah, you got a first and second.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Okay. All right. Unanimous.
Thank you.
Item three, public comments. Do we have any public that wants to speak?
Well said.
All right, and on that, we'll go to item four,
yep.
New business. So we're going to move item 4.3 first, which is the Measure J Traffic Congestion Relief Agency verbal update.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, TAG members. It's my pleasure to introduce to you this evening the Measure J Traffic Congestion Relief Agency, or TRAFICS. Our new program administrator, Heidi Kinniston Lee. This is Heidi.
Heidi, you're wondering.
Heidi is here this evening to give you a very brief update on where we are with respect to bus ridership, any issues that have surfaced since the first day of school. And then next year, Heidi's only been on board for about a month and a half. She is a Santa Monica employee, but she's also actually working on behalf of the Joint Powers Authority implementing the school bus program. So once she gets her feet wet, after about 4 or 5 months, we'll have her come back and give you a very comprehensive overview and background on the TRAFICS program, explaining how the program got started 10 years ago, where we are today, and where we hope to see ourselves in the next 5 to 10 years. So her update tonight will be very brief, and then she'll come back again, as I mentioned, at a later date, probably January or February, with a much more comprehensive background. So with that, I will turn it over to Heidi.
I thought it was funny because you mentioned getting my feet wet, and they feel really soaking right now. Yeah, they're plenty wet, I'll tell you. So it's nice to meet all of you. Want to give you some updates. As you know, this is our student transportation program. The primary focus is to reduce traffic congestion, and for those of you who are new to the group, there have been several studies, a lot of work gone into figuring out where the most congested intersections near schools were, and combined with the where there would be demands to implement the program in the most effective way. So that's what's driven our 11 school participation. We have 23 buses in our fleet. Our bus service provider is First Student. It operates out of Concord. Actually, Lisa and I have toured the bus yard and met the bus drivers and so forth. We currently have sold nearly 1,700 bus passes for our schools. We have 6 elementary schools, we have 2 middle schools, and we have 3 high schools that we service. Plenty of others who I'm sure would like the service, but we do have finite funding that limits how many buses we can operate, but we do a good job with what we do operate. Other things she mentioned, it's a Joint Powers Authority. Again, for those of you who are new, it's City of San Ramon, the Town of Danville, the San Ramon Valley Unified School District, and then the Contra Costa County. So those are the Joint Power Agencies. Some of the challenges, I'll finish on successes because that's always a good positive note to finish on. Some of our challenges are, of course, you know, they're buses, they're mechanical, you know, they have to be kept up. I think First Student does a good job, but they do break down from time to time. Getting those buses through traffic to where they need to go on time, you know, there's a very small margin with these bus routes. Sometimes it's 1 or 2 minutes to get from one stop to another. And so that inherently is a challenging task. And being a bus driver, I will tell you, is a very challenging task. I've never been a bus driver, but I have great respect. So timing is certainly an issue. Staffing, you know, historically, bus services have experienced shortages, a lot of transition with bus drivers, so that, you know, is often the case this week. I know they had some what they call call-outs when folks call in sick or they don't show up or whatever, but I'm pleased to report that at this time we have a full roster of bus drivers, and that really helps operations run smoothly. Mm-hmm. So that's really good. The route and stop planning, you know, where the route's going to be, making it so that it's conducive to all the kids on that route, so it's central, being respectful of elementary school kids not having to walk too far, but the high school kids maybe can walk a little bit further. There's a real art to the whole thing, right? So, and I'm learning a lot real fast. And then finally, probably some of the challenges would be behavioral issues. You know, it's a big bus. You've got high school kids in the back. We do have cameras on our high school buses in the front and the back. That helps. You know, we certainly work closely with our school district. We have a memorandum of understanding with them about following a progressive discipline policy, but behavior is something that we really work closely with the different agencies to deal with. So some fun stuff. The success is, and Lisa can tell you more about this, but there has been significantly positive impact on our traffic congestion because of this. I think there are probably folks with kids in the school district that don't remember what it was like before we had traffics and would not want to go back to that place. And so that is, of course, the main objective of the measure, and that certainly is being achieved. You know, parents look at it in terms also of independence, building independence with our kids, which is something that our kids these days don't always have a lot of opportunities to do, and just fun and developing friendships and life skills. So it's a good program. So a couple of fun things that are coming up. On October 24th, we are going to provide orange shirts to our bus drivers to celebrate Unity Day, which is an anti-bullying effort because we strive for having bully-free buses, and we think that that's a good partnership with our bus drivers to send that message of support for kids who have been bullied and to say there's a zero tolerance of bullying on the buses. And then also, just a heads up that October 22nd through the 24th is National School Bus Safety Week. So we will not only work to communicate with our traffic families about the importance of school bus safety, but also the community at large. It's interesting to know that most of the fatalities and accidents that occur with regard to school buses are outside of the buses. So, you know, people don't stop when they see those. I'm sorry, my back's to you guys. But the people don't stop when they see the buses stop, and they should. And that's really when you run into trouble. So it's got to be an education piece on both sides. And then we are about to embark on a web redesign for the traffic's website, which has been around for about 10 years, I believe. Yeah. And so it can use some improvement. And we hope that that is well received by our customers and also helps with the operational side of the piece and helps us sell more passes and get more cars off the road. So I think that was about it. Did you guys have any questions about traffic's, or I guess we're going to come back to you with even more exciting bus details.
One question.
Yeah.
So there was a second bus added to Coyote Creek, I believe.
Yes.
Was that filled? I know last meeting we talked about the pass
rate. I think we are at about 43 for the new bus. And the first CK13, which is the older bus, that one sold out. And then the new bus is getting close. Good. It's at 43. So that obviously was a good need. Another interesting, since you've been around, another big move that happened before I got here was the consolidation of the two Walnut Creek buses. They had sort of low ridership.
Walt Disney.
What did I say?
Walnut Creek.
Why? I'm on the phones at 6:30 in the morning, so I'm surprised I'm doing as well as I am, actually. Walt Disney. Thank you, PJ, for being here. They're looking at me like, what are you talking about? But yeah, Walt Disney, they had the two buses that got consolidated, and they're over halfway filled now, which is really good and really validating for those of you prior to my being here, felt that that was a good move. So it's like this constant putting the puzzle together, right, and this thing. So, but I have to say, I'm not just saying this because Lisa's here, but it's well guided by a board of directors with members from all of the agencies and a technical advisory committee who, you know, with representatives from the different measure, PJ's on there. She helps out with that. Lisa helps out with that. They're a bunch of folks. And they're really invested in reducing traffic congestion in a smart, safe way. So makes my job that much more rewarding. So was that it, Lisa? Can you think of anything? Is that good?
That's very good. We're going in January.
So, yeah, my feet are soaked.
Deep breath.
Deep breath, yeah. But thank you. I look forward to giving you future reports. And thank you for having me.
Thank you. Great.
Okay. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you. All right, guys. Thank you for the update. Yeah, for sure.
Good luck.
Okay, bye, guys. Swimming. Thank you. Yeah, soon it'll be.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye, PJ. Thanks for correcting me.
No, good night.
All right, we're going to go back to item 4.1, City Center Shuttle Service Plan, condition of approval.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I will do a very brief introduction. Chris Weeks is the Director of Transportation with Sunset Development. He oversees the transportation programs at Bishop Ranch. He also oversees the Bishop Ranch Transportation Association. Those members are Sunset Development, Chevron, and some of the larger businesses within Bishop Ranch. And so all of you, I'm sure, have seen the construction of City Center. If you haven't, then I don't know where you've been. But City Center is currently under construction, and one of the many conditions of approval for that project included a midday shuttle. And so Chris is here this evening to present to you the midday shuttle that will probably likely start by November 1st or mid-November, when we are anticipating City Center to open. So he's here this evening. He will present the midday shuttle service plan. He'll answer any questions. Chris has a very comprehensive background in transportation. He's done a lot of work in the Bay Area for the private and public sector. So Bishop Ranch is not his first job doing transportation. He's had a lot of experience, and he's been here now probably 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm.
Just a little over 6 years now.
Yeah, and so he's done a phenomenal job at Bishop Ranch. All the bike share programs that you see and the TDM programs that are implemented at Bishop Ranch are all under his watch. So I want to thank him for being here this evening, and I will now turn it over to Chris.
Thank you, Lisa. It's mm-hmm. a pleasure to be here. I hear a lot about the great work you guys do. I'm part of the TDM Advisory Committee and co-chair there. So we're always paying attention to what comes out of this committee, and you guys are an example of professionalism that we hope to live up to at some point. We're just learning the ropes ourselves. So I'm here tonight to talk about the circulator bus, and one of the main reasons I think that we need this bus, and it's actually called out in the conditions of approval, is we have 30,000 employees that live with that work within a close distance of this new city center, and at the end I'll pull up the new website. The new website was just launched tonight, so if we don't end up having time, check it out when you get home. It has a list of all the shops and stuff like that mm-hmm. we're going to be going
to. That's
exciting. But see if you can break it and let us know. But this is designed to get employees from their buildings to the city center to do shopping, to do errands, to get coffee, to get beer, to watch a movie, to do all the things that people are going to enjoy. Anthropology is going to be there, Crate and Barrel, and a lot of great companies that you've grown to love but have to drive a long way to get to are now right here. So that's going to be pretty exciting. So we're hoping that people use this bus, and we want to try to use advanced technology. So we haven't quite gotten to the final selection yet. We're almost there, but we're still negotiating the last piece, so we've actually pulled in another vendor to compete with that vendor again to try to up their game just a little bit. So we've tentatively selected Chariot at this point, and you may have seen that Chariot bus is running for Connected San Ramon, is that what it's called, the one that connects the hotels?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they signed an agreement with them to provide mm-hmm. transportation for people at the hotels in the area. And they've been doing a good job with that. And they're owned by Ford, so they are a solid company, good backing, and can provide a vehicle at a moment's notice. And these are some of the challenges we'd had working with some of the smaller bus providers we use. Like, for example, with our San Francisco Express bus that we run. That bus, if it goes down, it's hard to get a backup bus. It's they're yards far away. They're a small family company. Even though we love that, we want to get someone in here who can scale up if we need. So on a really rainy day, or if there's a really big event, like something like tree lighting or some really big event going on at City Center, we can talk to them and have a fixed rate to be able to add more buses. So this is good. What I'll talk about tonight is just the kind of fixed service that we'll have Monday through Friday. So this is the conditions of approval, and that's, I just put the words there so that I have copies of this. Maybe you can pass these around. I have 12 copies, so I don't think that's enough for everybody. I think Lisa wants.
Okay.
So, and you could read that in your leisure. I didn't put that up for you to read on the screen. The gist of it is it's going to be two fixed routes to start out. There's going to be an inner and an outer route. And that's how it's going to start. But our goal is to operate it with dynamic trip routing. So if you guys know, like a normal fixed route service has to go to every stop. And it has, even if there's no one waiting there. They don't know if anybody's there, but they just got to go by it anyways. So what we're going to operate it as is a dynamic routed system where you actually have to have an app and request a seat. So in that way, you'll download, and this may change, but our goal is to have it be completely dynamic. So if someone takes out their phone, they request the bus, the next run, which will be every 10 to 15 minutes, will connect everyone that's selected that they want to ride the bus and only go to those stops. So it won't be circulating, wasting gas, and dragging people around in places they don't need to go. It'll initially be fixed route dynamic mapping. So it'll be, there'll only be one place at each building it stops, but it'll only go to the buildings where people have made requests. And then once the technology's done, and Ford is working on this now, and they were saying that by Q2 they should be done with this, is that it'll allow them, people to request a ride from anywhere, and they'll be able to go pick them up and bring them in.
And this is only within Bishop Branch?
This is just within Bishop Branch, and it's designed for employees. That's the purpose of it, mm-hmm. to keep people from driving their cars to the city center that short distance and filling up spots where people who may need to drive would need to park. So it's kind of our way of saying, hey, we'll provide this to you if you just leave your car parked in the parking lot near your work because you're already there and you want to give up that spot anyways. So it's going to make a lot of sense for people to use this bus. So it's got to work. So there's going to be two vehicles, a 14-passenger and an 8-passenger with a wheelchair lift. So we want to be able to take wheelchairs because we do have some people in wheelchairs who work in Bishop Ranch 15 and 8 and some other locations that we know. And we transport them already using County Connection and they have full wheelchair accessibility, so we want to have that opportunity. This other vendor I told you that we're now talking to, I'm trying to up the size of the bus a little bit more to try to get 20 passengers in it and get transit-style doors. Chariot doesn't have transit-style doors. They have this kind of sliding door, which is for some people, it's, you know, if your shoulder's bothering you, like you were saying, it's sometimes it's hard to pull on that door. So I'd like to get transit-style doors. So hopefully we'll be able to get that too and add that to this. It'll be going from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The term of the contract will be for 3 years, and that was determined by the condition of approval, which said we've got to operate it for 3 years. If it's going badly after 3 years, well, we could use the resources somewhere else. If it's going great, we could expand it even more and make it open to other people. So, and we're shooting for every 10 minutes. It'll probably be every 10 to 15, depending on how these routes work. But I've been kind of paring down the number of stops to try to simplify it. And since our last meeting, where we presented to the TDM Advisory Committee, I have fewer stops, and I'll explain why. This is what the bus will look like. We're going to have it branded for City Center, so it'll be recognizable and different from the ones that are Discover San Ramon, so people will know what it looks like. And we're the first ones that got to do a full wrap of the chariots. In the past, they only let you put stuff on the windows, so that's a... Took me a few days of shouting to get. it's hard to see on the screen, but you may want to pull this up. These are the two routes. I can use the laser. Right in here is the City Center stop. So there's this purple route was the inner loop, and the red is the outer loop. And just before you start questioning this, you'll see that Bishop Ranch 1 and Chevron aren't being served. And one of the reasons for that is that we kind of looked at how easy it is to walk. I mean, we want people to walk. We don't want everybody to drive. And so we kind of made these little, like that's like 2.5 football fields, each one, each circle. It's like 1,000 feet. I mean, most people can walk that or are comfortable with that, or, you know, they prefer not if they want to, if they are really posh, but most people can walk this distance. And you'll see that Chevron and Bishop Ranch 1 both takes them to the corner of City Center. So we thought that rather than tangling things up on Bollinger additionally, we'll just not try to cross it, and that'll keep us on schedule and make us move a lot more quickly. So I'm using a new stop, which is something which is part of City Center, and it's actually off the roadway. It's up and pull in. It's a long bus stop. It's reserved for buses. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good idea. And I think people will be happy to be dropped there. It puts them near some of the better shops. And another option was to do Sunset and Bishop up here, which is a current stop. But that kind of is far away from a big chunk of the and it makes you have to cross an additional intersection to get to City Center. So the stop that's up here is a little bit closer. So I tried to have everything going there. So I just changed the routing to go through this parking lot. That's something that's changed since last time we spoke. Before, I had it going around the back here. And everybody was asking me why, because it just kind of seems out of the way. It's like this long ramble. And so we want to try it. Since this is a secondary arterial, the Camino Ramon, we were trying to just have as much of the main traffic going to there so we can keep it quiet back here for cycling and walking and things like that that road's designed to do. So let's see what else. You'll see that Bishop Ranch 3 isn't served. It is right next to the transit center, so it's just there's a little walkway right here that's right in between that's pretty easy to walk from those buildings to the transit center. But our longer range goal is to have the autonomous bus, which is not really longer range. That's going to be soon because we're testing it this Saturday on this intersection. But this green route is where we want it to go. And this intersection here is what we're going to be having this bus talking to that little controller and telling the intersection what to do, and the intersection will be telling the bus what to do, and they'll have this wonderful relationship, and then they'll have a long-term relationship which will lead to lots of people riding the bus. So that's the goal. And eventually, once we clear out trailers from here, it'll actually serve the crosswalk for City Center. Right now there's going to be trailers in this area probably up until the end of January, because they're going to be doing final build-out of City Center and taking care of all the last bits and pieces. So I probably won't start doing this until the end of Q1, but at first it'll be just doing this L shape and going back and forth, taking people from GE to GE, because they have locations in both locations. And also getting people to this pinch here, which is right next to Roundhouse, where we have a whole bunch of places to eat. Boats that you can float around in here, fish, those kinds of things.
Fish.
People fish there. So they've actually been fishermen and putting fish in there for themselves to fish. So there's some pretty big fish there. So we haven't figured out how we're going to control that, but you know, we aren't rough about it. You can still fish there.
What are the times for that, by the way?
The running of the autonomous bus, that's not scheduled yet. Because this weekend we have to prove that it can do that. And once we prove it can do that, then I'm going to locate it in the underground parking, which is under the building, for its charging and its storage. And then we'll time out the route. The route's already planned, so we know what it is. We've trimmed all the trees. I think it'll probably be during the same time as the circulator bus, which will be 10 to 6, and it'll be designed to get employees to and from City Center and food. So those are kind of the pieces of this puzzle. One thing I didn't mention is these blue dots on your map are places that I kind of looked at where most people are entering and exiting the buildings. So when I was looking at the perimeter, I was trying to look at where these blue dots were and have them show up in every loop to show that it's walkable from the more popular entrances and exits. So the last two little pieces, let me see if this has everything on it, our commute program on the buses will be still running, still taking people and still circulating before 10. So people can use that bus to circulate around inside Bishop Ranch in the mornings and in the evenings during commute. We also have our bike share system, which all our employees can use 24/7. So those are going to be available. And the 35, we have some big plans for that to expand service on the 35. And that'll make this last piece of the connection between Transit Center, which is the City of San Ramon property, and City Center. The 35 will be coming down the hill, and it'll be touching here, going to City Center, and then it'll be going back around up through the hills, coming back around, and coming back to this City Center again. So there's going to be an opportunity that people could use the city bus to do those connections if they need to transfer from another service. So the connection's there for the public, and for the private, it's there through our system. So hopefully that's a good intro to what we're going to do, and as we get closer to things, I'll make sure to provide you guys with the exact vendor we end up using. And we're open to other ideas and ways we can integrate those ideas. So thank you for listening, and make sure you get one of my cards before you hit the road. And do you guys have any questions? Yes.
So it's for employees, right?
Yes.
What if an employee has a guest or a visitor and wants to go to lunch with them?
It's allowed, actually. With the Chariot program that we already have 90% bid out, the driver has a tablet and they can vouch for riders. So one of the people who is at Bishop Ranch could say, I have two guests.
Oh, okay.
The other way that we've allowed them to do, we have kind of a secondary fail-safe where if someone has decided not to do that in the app and they just have their guests with them, then there's a code that the driver can enter in their tablet that tells the system that there's going to be two guests.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead. Do you think it'll be expanded to later hours in 6 to try to help promote people having dinner and getting cars off the streets or in the commute?
Yeah, and that's something that we discussed early on. You know, what is the purpose of this? And you know, the first purpose, of course, is to put in what we need to get the building built, and then the second purpose is to learn from how the building's being used and then add to it as we move along. So that's why we put in that idea of being able to add buses. You know, if we brought in later service, then we would it changes the way that the drivers are staggered. So we obviously have to bring in more drivers and make some additions to the service. So, I mean, we're interested in that. It really depends on whether our parking lots end up being in the evenings an extension of the parking at City Center, because our people are at City Center for the nighttime events. Mm-hmm. And I think that we may see that, but we don't know how that's going to play out. Mm-hmm. So I think we want to see how that goes to decide whether we want to look at extending it to later. But that's a good point, because there is a brewery and also a great movie house that are going to be there, and people love to shop in the evening. So mm-hmm. I think in the evenings we're going to have a lot of our people maybe staying. But I think a lot of those people are rushing home to be with their families, so you're going to have people who are rushing home from the rest of the Bay Area to here, and they're going to be wanting to come in from outside to Bishop Ranch.
What time's the last shuttle that goes to that leaves for Civic Center?
Well, we don't have the schedule all decided. Okay. Yeah,
because somebody goes there at 4, they'll probably miss the black bus coming back.
Right. If they go at like 4:30 for sure.
Too much fun.
If they have a movie, they go see a movie, away, yeah. Right? They see an epic 3D movie that's 3 hours.
They might need to walk it off. Good point. One other question. So, in this documentation, you said that they're looking for a modification of the program that allowed non Bishop Ranch employees to participate. What conditions or circumstances are you looking
for the autonomous
to add? Well, no, just we're working with Cherry to design a modification to allow non-Bishop Ranch employees to use the service. What conditions are you looking for to get to that next?
Yeah, this is it all hinges on ADA and what our vendors can bring to the table as far as wheelchair lifts. And this, it starts to get into the lawyer language, which to me is like talking backwards, which I can do really slowly, but it's not pretty to see. But my understanding of the law is that if you have the ADA law, if someone with a wheelchair is boarding a public service and they have to request the wheelchair to come, they can't just show up and know that there's going to be a wheelchair there. That means that there's a difference in service. And so they're getting treated differently. Even though they can and there is a wheelchair available, they have to make that request, whereas an able-bodied person doesn't have to worry about that. So if we're going to, in order to get around that, I think we would have to have wheelchairs on both vehicles. And once you do that, then you drop the amount of seating by half. Mm-hmm. So if you're moving 7 people in that vehicle and we can't have people standing legally, that ends up not being super impactful for most people. So we're trying to find a way that we can do it as a private service, but allow the public to be part of our private service, but then not trigger the same requirements that you'd have with a public service with ADA. And we've been negotiating with Chariot's lawyers about how to figure that out. And there's a glimmer of hope, but I think that's why we're bringing in some other people, is that we want to see what we can do with another type of rolling stock, so something that's more like a cutaway with the transit doors. It's a little uglier, not as clean, but it might allow us to be able to take more passengers, have wheelchair lifts on both of them, and take care of allowing the public to ride parts of it. I think the odds are good that we'll allow the public to ride certain parts of it, but how that will happen is not sorted out yet. So it's a good question, and it's at the crux of the reason why this stuff is getting a little loose again, because the lawyers brought that up.
Good. So just a quick question. So anybody who wants to use the buses need to download the app and use the app for the buses, or to build their business?
That's what we would like, because we want it to be dynamic. So if we don't know there's going to be a person getting on somewhere and going somewhere, then the bus can't eliminate stops. So we, because there's no one there, right? So that's why we put in these multiple ways of people to check in. So if the bus goes to a place where there's someone who's already requested a pickup and they haven't downloaded the app, they can be checked in with a code by the driver and allowed to ride. So that'll take care of that. But really, we would prefer everybody to have the app, because then otherwise they can't do the dynamic wrapping or mapping. And if they're waiting at a stop where there's nobody has requested a pickup, and we do the dynamic routing and they're just sitting there, the bus never comes. So, I mean, if you look at the demographics of this place, a lot of people have cell phones. And, you know, anybody in the work world probably has a cell phone, and we have that. And anybody in, you know, working in the bank system, there's a lot of banks in Bishop Branch, they all have phones. And all the tech people in Bishop Branch have phones. So I'd say the odds are very good they'll have phones. We looked into just making another aspect of our Clipper card program, where we have allowed people to be able to tag onto all the buses and the bikes and all those things. But we decided that it's probably better to have that data going into something that allows us to do the dynamic mapping, because that's really our goal. Is because once you can do dynamic wrapping, you cut down the time of your of each run to very small amount. You can get it down to, you know, 5 minutes. You know, so if we can add a trip every 5 minutes, we double the capacity of the service, and it's better for everybody. So
what I've seen is, in some places, what they do is, in addition to that, they also have a button at the bus stops that you can press if you don't want to use the app, and you just go there, press the button, it knows that there is a person waiting for the bus.
That's a good idea.
And it gets added to the dynamic routing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's something that I've seen before. The really low-tech version I've seen has a button, and then there's a light that turns on the top of the stop, right. And then the driver can see that there's someone waiting there. I think we're beyond that. It would make a lot of, but I mean, if you heard, we could do that. And if it's, I mean, I'm open to doing something like that, you know, and especially if you could do other things with it. You know, if it, you know, there are emergency posts that you can use to call police and things like that. So if there was a, you know, maybe having something like that on those after hours, you know, in the long run. Lisa mentioned I've done this for a lot of places, and one of the places I did this was Presidio and also UCSF, which are some of the bigger kind of San Francisco shuttle systems. And for UCSF, we had these kind of late night safety shuttles to be able to get people from place to place and they wouldn't just run, you'd have to call them and request them. So something like that, as we have people living in Bishop Branch and working in Bishop Branch, there's going to be a need for those kind of things. Right now, you can call security and they'll walk you to your car, but legally they can't give that person a ride in the police car to their car. So we kind of stalk the person behind walking their car. But, you know, these are good thoughts. I think there's more uses for something like that than just calling the bus.
Just call it, right?
Yeah, and, you know, definitely look at that.
For this app, can you, like, book in advance, in the sense you know that you have an appointment half an hour later, so you book that bus stop 4, I'll be there in 15 minutes, pick me up, kind of a thing?
Yeah, so if you look at the Chariot app, and anybody can download that, they have, I think, only 2 public routes in all their system, but they have hundreds and hundreds of non-public routes, and routes all over the world. But the public route, San Francisco, you can see, and you could buy a ticket on it. So it shows the bus moving on its route, shows all the stops, and you tap the stop, it tells you when the next bus is going to be arriving, and it tells you how much you pay for that ride.
You go there at that
and then you press it, and you charge it through your phone, pops up a little ticket, and then when you board, you just go, hey, I got a ticket, and then let you on. So if you get a chance to download the Chariot app, you can remove it afterwards, but if you want to see it, that's going to be something like that, and we'll just be one of the services in the drop-down. That's the plan.
Just a quick question, how is it being communicated to the Bishop Branch businesses?
Well, marketing plan, so that's the first step. So it's going to be, we're a TMA, so my office has contacts in every company in Bishop Branch, so we have kind of primary and secondary contacts for the leases. So we'll send information out to those primary and secondary contacts to send out to their staff. And our goal, one thing Lisa didn't mention, and because it sounds like it might not happen, but we'll see if it happens, is if in October, we're hoping that in October we could run it for a month or so just to see how any problems we have, make sure the app works, those kinds of things. So our actual contract starts October 1 with them. So we have a month of just banging on it, trying to fix it, break it, those kinds of things before we actually open it for day one.
Mm-hmm. You said it's a website too? Or is it on the city website?
No, it's its own app. So no, I mean, we'll have our,
at this stuff. I mean,
we have our own Bishop Branch webpage, and that's okay. City Center has its own webpage, and then Bishop Branch has its own webpage. I think this is getting a little too complicated with the web. I think eventually we're going to squish them all together, but City Center has a very distinct look. So when you look at the City Center website, you'll see it's a lot like Instagram, for example. It's just like a big photograph and a few words, and you swipe up and down. That's really how web pages are going now. Our webpage has a lot of information. It's a great resource, but we want to get it to be also a little bit more graphic, too. So it'll be a section in the transportation section of our website. Mm-hmm. And if you've never seen that, take a look, poke around. We do a lot of surveying of people. So like if someone, I should mention this, the City Center employees will become part of our TMA mm-hmm. when they start working. So as they onboard, I have information I give them. They get a free bus pass that gives them unlimited rides on County Connection. And I tell them about the 35 that goes right to their front door. So that hopefully will reduce the amount of people driving into work each day. And then they have access to all of the services like Guaranteed Ride Home and the bike program and all those things. So I think that combined helping the workers there, and that'll be part of their onboarding. We do that with all the companies. So when people, we do these regular, what we call dog and pony shows. I don't know exactly why, because I've never seen a dog and pony show. A dog show and a pony show. But so we do these shows for all the companies when they bring on large groups or when they move to Bishop Branch, and we get everybody with the bus pass in their pocket, and that would be the time where we talk about this. We'd say, see that over there, that City Center, you hear those bands playing, that's where you want to go. You want to go and enjoy it. And so they'll head over there and use that shuttle. And since it's free, it'll be a way that they can, you know, maybe their coworkers can say, hey, let's go out to lunch, I'll show you the shuttle, you know. Stuff like that. And then in the longer run, we have in our contract that we want to have displays in all of those buses with kind of marketing for the stuff that goes on in City Center. And I know County Connection's working on some displays in their buses. So, you know, integrating these transit systems and the destinations for those transit systems, I think is been really fruitful for us. Our partnership with County Connection, where you've seen the County Connection buses wrapped in the Bishop Branch mm-hmm. look and feel, and we help fund it. And our ridership allows them to apply for money to get more buses. So it's this great partnership. And I think these partnerships pay off for the riders and the operators and the retail where they go. So hopefully it'll be part of that.
So the last comment I'll make is that Chris will be back here about 6 months after implementation. He'll give an update, provide you with an overview of how the shuttle is working, ridership data, and any tweaks that they're making to the system. So we'll look forward to hearing that update probably next summer.
Okay, that sounds good. And mm-hmm. and also in the interim, just so you know, if we end up working with Chariot, they'll have a dashboard that I can share with you guys. So it's okay. Something that you guys can pull up and look at and see. And ideally, I'd like to give that to the public, and if it's good news. If it's bad news, I'll share it with you. I'll share it with you, and you can help me fix it.
Oh, thank you.
So thanks for your time, and if anybody wants my card, I brought a bunch of cards. Call me anytime. Come on over, go for a boat row or lunch or something like that. You haven't have any of you guys taken a boat out yet?
No, I'm not a boat. Walk around.
All right. Anytime, and summer's waning, so maybe next summer, but there'll still be a lot of stuff to do at City Center, so check out the website tonight when you get home. I think it's City Center Bishop Branch is what it's called. It just was turned on about half an hour ago.
Wow. Awesome.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, so the next item is 4.2, ITS Master Plan. Deborah's going to be presenting.
So let me just take a moment and introduce to all of you. I don't know if all the TAC members have met Deborah Fear. Deborah is our senior traffic engineer. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
So she's here this evening to present to you the city's ITS master plan, and she's pulling up her presentation. And then real quickly, also want to introduce our city engineer, Brian Bornstein. He's also here this mm-hmm. evening. He's behind me in the corner here. Hi, Brian.
Good evening.
All right, Deb, so I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, hope you don't mind if I sit down. okay. First thing I want to do is apologize if you got stuck on Bollinger Canyon Road the last couple of days. I know it was messy, but it had to be done, and those two intersections are done, and next week we'll be on to Iron Horse Trail and Marketplace, so stay away.
Wednesday and Thursday.
This plan, the ITS Master Plan, originated because of our existing traffic signal infrastructure and communication network. It's lack of bandwidth and poor condition. We were looking to upgrade it, so you know, for future technologies. And so, as we started looking at installing a fiber network. For better communication, bigger bandwidth. The project actually became bigger than just traffic. It kind of turned into a citywide project. It just doesn't benefit traffic. It kind of benefits everyone. So the ITS Master Plan doesn't include all of the things that we would want in an ITS network for traffic. Right now, it's a living document, but this is a really good start. And we went to Infrastructure Committee last month, and they gave us some really good comments, which we incorporated into the document that you were presented. And to do the ITS Master Plan, we hired Kimley Horn, our consultant. And Kevin Agigi is here. He's the project manager, and he's going to do the bulk of the presentation.
That's not the word. Does it every time.
So see if that works for you. But this is Kevin. He's got extensive experience in the ITS world, and Kimley Horn in general has a lot of experience and a lot to call on for resources.
Tesla, I'm not sure how to advance the slide.
It's a yellow button.
Okay. Very good for me. Well, thank you for having us this evening. I'll just go through a few slides, and if you have any questions, you can stop me and want to keep it informal. Like I said, Deb said we did present to the Infrastructure Committee last month. Good comments, and we've incorporated that. So the plan's slightly different from the original plan that we submitted, and we can walk through a few of those tonight. But we start off with the purpose of the plan, and really we wanted to evaluate the city's information, communication, and technology systems. As Deb said, we just started off with traffic, and as we started talking to different city department stakeholders, it grew into something a little bit bigger. So the term ITS Master Plan is not necessarily deceiving, but it's more than that. It's actually a communication plan for the city, eventually. We looked at the future needs and cost of implementation of an overall plan. We need to establish a vision. We're going with this plan, and as part of the vision, we need to define a roadmap for the implementation of that vision. As Deb said, a key part of this is it's a living and breathing document. And we typically recommend 3 to 5 years. You want to revisit the document. It could be shorter with technology changing, so this is one of those things where what I say today, literally another week, we just update it. We recognize that. So, but I think, like Deb said, it's a good way for the city to start saying, hey, here's how we see it. How do we move forward? You know what our next few steps are? And we'll do that. So some of the goals of the plan, some of these are they're a little bit generic, but they really apply to the city very well. Establish a framework to plan, design, and implement a comprehensive fiber optic network. This is putting glass in the ground so we can connect up different systems, facilities, so that you don't have constraints when it comes to your network. It's just more the information that can travel through it is what you can apply. Without the constraints of the pipelines, the freeway system to get those things together. It's for use by all city agencies and departments. We really envision the goal to carry the city to the next generation of communication technologies and tools. Those really go hand in hand. Put fiber in the ground, but using tools now that's going to use that fiber so that. And those tools just change. Chris was talking, I was suggesting came up to them, and he was going, well, how do I implement those tools? but we want to get the framework and the network in so that we have that. And then achieve the city's smart city goals. Those are, I think, are still a work in progress, but one of those goals is really to establish the city moving into the next generation, have a connected city, making sure that these tools, that when they're able to be used, that the constraint isn't the network. The constraint is how do you use these tools? We have it, and it's there, so now how are you using it, not the cost of the infrastructure to produce, recognize those goals. For those of you who aren't familiar with ITS, I know I do see my peers who are very familiar with this. The benefits of ITS, it's numerous in nature, and I think a lot of people recognize it. The first four bullets here are sort of the commodity items for benefits. It's reduced congestion, enhanced safety, multimodal management. It's just not about cars, it's about buses, bikes, and pedestrians as well. And improved travel reliability, the ability to say when the next bus is going to arrive, or you see the things on the freeway saying how long it's going to take you to get from point A to point B. That's all part of the whole umbrella of intelligent transportation systems. Then getting down to the city, we really identified, you know, some of the benefits with this plan is efficiencies of fiber connecting city facilities, cost savings. There's a lot of lease connections that can be moved onto fiber, saving, last I heard, could be hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in cost. Connecting and coordinating with neighboring agencies like Caltrans, is always a need for the traffic engineering department to say, hey, what's happening on the freeway? Can you get access to those cameras and see what's happening? There's a diversion off the freeway, how can you handle that? Need that kind of communication. One thing we heard loud and clear from the police department was they would love to get live video feeds. And once all those things are working, whether it be for just looking at incidents and all that, or license plate reads. So they're very, very excited about that and the possibility of not having fiber and cameras in their system, their means. For the existing system, these are just some things of reason why this plan was really developed. The existing system is very close to becoming functionally obsolete. And these are very close because it's slow, it's incapable of really providing efficient tools for traffic management operations. I think we talked about just for Deb to figure out what's going on, she has to drive out there and look at it and figure things out. There's existing complement now. There's a problem. They don't have the tools to figure out where the problem is. It's more, I think it could be there. And they're spending a lot of time trying to figure out the problems. And, let's say it's a state of disrepair due to the outdated equipment. Replacement parts are difficult to obtain. So very old technology. these items are sort of, as we talked, they're slapped together. Like, get these different parts together just to keep it functioning. Moving that's one of the problems with the existing system. And really staff just devoting a lot of time, wasted time, in operations and maintenance. So this is very indicative of a system that really needs to move into the next generation so that we can actually address the things I like saying, okay, now we can take care of those, the city can focus more on maintaining and operating the system, not trying to maintain it obviously with the tools they have there, it's outdated. It's hard to see the slide, but we did follow a process, and if you're trying to hand out, you can read it more. Really started with looking at what was the existing system. We did a needs assessment. We didn't want to start a plan that wasn't needed, and we listened loud and clear to all the different departments saying, what do you need? We had this, we'll do it. So from there, we looked at the needs, looked at the existing inventory, and we decided what the future vision of this overall system looked like. So it's like, here's your wish list based on your needs. Now, with the existing system and the vision of that, we identified the gaps. What are you missing to get to your vision? And that became, and we'll show you some slides, that became the gap assessment. And now, how do we fill those gaps? How do we define, ultimately, projects that the city can get funding for and implement to close those gaps and realize the vision? And I'll just say right now, it's about $26, $27 million for the overall plan. You can't just go get $27 million and do it all at once. So we prioritized and phased in the plan, looking at what you really need to start day one. And then as you build on that one, you grow it and you add on these different phases of the project, of the program, to ultimately realize the vision. And by the time you maybe do the first few phases, the document needs to be updated. And that's when you reprioritize and all that. So you can set your priorities, reset them again, and build on that. So I think it's a living and breathing document. So what I show you here is today's slice in time, the next few slides as far as what we've come up with. So before I get there, the development process, again, just spoke ahead, but a needs assessment is what we started with, coordinated with the city departments, did an inventory, determined what the ultimate system looked like based on needs, identified the gaps, and then developed a prioritized set of projects and the overall implementation plan. So this is the city's infrastructure. This is the infrastructure. The pink line shows existing conduit in the ground that carries copper cable today, connects up all the traffic signals. There's quite a bit of conduit in the ground with copper, and the intent is to reuse a lot of this existing conduit. I think we calculated it probably saves $3 to $5 million right off the bat using existing conduit. I can't remember that number sounds like that. So, again, this is where we started with, and we, looking at the overall vision, and we, making all the connections to all the city facilities in blue, I guess dark blue, light blue, would be fiber and new conduits in the ground. The thought is to replace all the existing copper, people in the fiber, and migrate to fiber optic network itself, but focusing on just clearing all the gaps.
Does the conduit go on the street?
Yes.
No, I don't use these. So you would put conduit, let's say, on San Juan Valley Boulevard when you go to do the paving next?
Probably not. We do the paving now. It's going to be its own project, or you know, something that if there's something later in the presentation that we're working on.
One thing to note, and I'll just briefly say, so for example, if you look at here, there's a series of these loops. We're basically trying to create loops and close gaps. And one of the things that the infrastructure committee recognized was this particular, it really doesn't connect any traffic signals, but it's a perfect opportunity to close a gap and provide redundancy to your network. So it's part of just not connecting, we wouldn't just connect all signals and facilities, we want to provide redundancies, and we call it, you know, like if your fiber gets impacted through construction and all that, that's why it's a different path here. So you know, the section along Bollinger here, and the section down here along, this is
Acosta.
Those are redundant paths and all that. And if you look at the cost, those actually are lower on the priorities as far as implementation. Because we don't know in the end what those actually be able to afford initially. And it may change as time goes on. So what we have to do, so this is the set of priorities I'm kind of fast forwarding into all the work we did in terms of identifying the corridors and then prioritizing the corridors. So what we determined, so I can't see the zone there.
I know, it's really small.
Bollinger Canyon was
Number one,
including the connection from this building up to the street. There actually isn't a fiber connection up to the street, so that's one and one.
That came from the infrastructure committee.
Exactly, that was one of those that came from as well. So one and one A are paired. But the infrastructure committee basically said they would really love to get 1A right away, get that connection out there, because that is going to be your trunk line. That's going to be the one point of connection that you absolutely need to have for this plan. And then I think moving to the downtown area, which is certainly to our Bishop Branch City Center. And then from there, it went to different cities. I think Bollinger was third. And so the way the plan, the prioritization worked is start here and work out. Because you have to build your base and your backbone, and then you build it out from there. And then ultimately, the less important, but those areas that didn't connect as many signals or facilities, those were prioritized further away in later phases.
So Deborah, with the Crow Canyon widening job, are you going to take advantage of this infrastructure?
There's already conduit out there.
They're just pulling.
I don't know if the Crow Canyon widening project will. If there's enough money in there to pull the fiber, and but it's not really pulling the fiber that's we have found in our being is the most costly part. It's the splicing and hooking it into the equipment and the cabinets and that. those are things that we're looking into. Yep.
So this table on site 11 is a summary of the prioritization, the corridor segments, and the costs associated with that. So you can see there are 12 different, or at least 13 different corridor segments and phases. You can see the tally here of about $26.7 million. The cost estimates are in the report itself, a lot of contingencies. The project did not go and look at every conduit and pull box to assure things workable. So in lieu of doing that, we increased the contingencies to account for that, at least have some order of magnitude realistic, accurate cost. Hence the price tag looks a little steep. But we do, and the infrastructure committee did make a comment about that contingencies are high, but it's appropriate at this stage in the back.
So, in parallel with the ICS master plan, and completely separate, we did a network security assessment, and it's just basically a high-level evaluation of our existing traffic network and the security of it. And the conclusions, recommendations from that is that our network is at high risk right now, by directly connecting with fiber, it reduces our exposure and eliminates the DSL lines that we're currently using, and also any unused fiber, the dark fiber, can be used by other city facilities, but there's also an opportunity to lease the fiber to businesses in the area. And then the part that I was telling you with regards to like the San Juan Valley Boulevard conduit that you were asking about, Verizon MCI is coming through here and wanting to install fiber throughout the city for all their small cell sites, which is to give better service for them. A lot of their infrastructure requires new conduit, and we're asking them if they can, where they're installing conduit, where we have gaps, if they can install a conduit, an additional conduit with their conduit, so that we can close our gaps as well. And the city attorney is working out a deal with them, so I think it was 56 cents. For the conduit, which is really quite cheap. Verizon is also requesting the use of our existing conduit to pull their fiber in, so we're trying to work out some other deal with them for compensation for that. So
they would pull our fiber at the same time that they put their fiber in our conduit.
Wishful thinking. We've tried that.
It's a partnership and it takes a village.
Yep, it does. Exactly. So our next step, incorporate any comments from you, the TAC. And then we're going to present the final to the City Council, incorporate the projects that we have listed here into our five-year CIP, and just explore some grant opportunities. So
which grants do you think?
No idea. No idea right at the moment. But anything that comes along that we'd be eligible for.
So this ITS master plan, is this the first time that the city has created a master plan, or
yes,
it has been updated? Okay.
No, this is our first one, yeah, because we didn't have anything, and we were just, our communication infrastructure is falling apart. I still actually have the dial-up, the, you know, in some parts of the city. You know, we're using just regular DSL in some parts.
Don't admit it.
Okay. It's a huge frustration, and it's, you know, doing this first upgrade by putting fiber in will help, you know, our communication immensely. We'll be able to install more equipment, you know, like by actually updating the ITS master plan for more equipment that will help with moving traffic. For instance, we do have a grant that we're working on right now to implement automated traffic signal performance measures along the Crow Canyon corridor and the Bollinger Canyon corridor to help us better identify where there are bottlenecks and people are getting delayed, you know, that, and it'll help us improve the signal timing, you know, real time, using real time data. And, you know, we're just in the system engineering process, which is, you know, just figuring out what the city actually needs before we go out to procure materials and do the installation. But we're hoping to have that all installed in the spring. And when we get that, you know, we'll come back and, or, you know, I'll come back and I'll show you the results. And you know, like, we'll be able to do some before and after. And maybe, yeah, and maybe even ultimately, like, put information out on our website that's available to the general public. You know, really easy to read information.
Just curious, you talk about the current systems, you know, getting out of date. What's the, you know, this plan gets implemented obviously in phases. What's the life cycle or lifespan of a system like this?
Fiber?
Yeah, like forever.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's been around for 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, the I think the actual product has improved a little bit. I think it's more flexible. Am I right? You know, but yeah, like Phil said, it's been around for 20 years, and it's the best way to deliver data.
Do we know when these conduits were installed, the existing ones that are there, and we are saying we have to use it for the new fiber installation? Do you know how old those conduits are?
It depends on where you are in the city.
So the reason I'm asking is, since it's a master plan and Verizon is paying for the areas that are not covered, right, why don't we install? Because if you look at the master plan, there are places which are short, but we are still saying use existing conduits. Why can't we have new conduits out there too? Because we don't know the conduits, you know, what state it is in. It's under the ground for the last 10 years, so.
20, 30
years? It'll be very difficult to install, like, fiber to it and take advantage of Verizon.
Yeah, but I mean, they're only installing in certain areas in the city. I don't have a map because I think it's kind of a proprietary map of where they're installing. So, you know, we were just doing a comparison with, you know, our system and their system. And, you know, there were quite a few areas.
So, Deborah, when they put the conduit in, are they going to sweep up to a new box for the city, or are you going to have to access their pull box?
I don't have any details on that yet, but I think they're just going to pull it up and stub it out, and then we're going to have to install our own pull boxes and then connect them into the traffic signals.
And some of the conduits will be shared.
That's part of the proposal, yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? Good work.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Let's fund the money, too.
I know, thank you.
Big price tag.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Kim. We're going to move to the unfinished business.
Until
PJ is coming out for slides.
Oh,
okay.
I got a traffic signal.
Yeah.
Emergency apparently.
Autonomous vehicle.
Project.
Come this way. Thank you.
Bye. Bye, thank you.
You guys don't want to watch my presentation?
Come on. Signal emergency.
I'll just come sit there then, since we have a clicker.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. That would be Vanna White.
Just press the yellow.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, so 5.1 Weymouth Court permit parking updates.
That'll be me, thank you. Okay, so in your packet, there was a brief staff report, and it also included the letter and petition submitted by all 14 residents of Weymouth Court. So I'm just going to go into brief detail. Weymouth Court, the homes on Weymouth Court were built in 1967, so we're talking a very long time ago. Cal High was built actually after, so I know a lot of times when we have discussions we say, well, they should have known because the school was there, the shopping center was there. Well, in this case, the background information I've gotten from the residents on Weymouth Court is that here it was actually the opposite. They bought their homes, there was no high school, there was discussion of a high school, they protested and opposed it, the high school still came. So that was 1973. 1988, Weymouth Court actually received its permit parking. That's when it was initially implemented. At the time, they received the 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, which is pretty typical what you see out in most of the Cal High area. At that time in the 1980s, when permit parking was implemented, nearly every street got 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The only ones who got 24/7, 7 days a week, are the folks who live directly in front of California High School on Broadmoor Drive. So we're talking between Weymouth Court to Millbridge Drive, just that segment. Everyone else had the 7 to 4 because for the most part, it covered all of the Cal High activities. In 2006, we received a request from the residents of Weymouth Court to address the overflow parking issues. And through a series of observations and work that lasted nearly a year, we found that indeed between 1988 to 2006, the student population at Cal High had doubled. The number of after-school activities, you know, it went from simply having basketball and football to now you have lacrosse and water polo and all of these other activities that you didn't have back in 1973, as well as the number of clubs and all the other activities. We also had the addition of the San Ramon Aquatic Center, the tennis courts, and of course, as we all know, we run like crazy. Our kids are enrolled in pretty much every after-school activity, so those facilities are also highly impacted. So in 2007, City Council implemented the first, what we call 777 permit parking, which is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. So up to 7 p.m. covers most of the activities at the Aquatic Center, tennis courts, and the sports fields. And then the addition of Saturday and Sunday covers the swim meets at the Aquatic Center, as well as any large sporting events. So back in 2006, many of the pictures that were shared with City Council included RVs and campers parked on Weymouth Court for the large swim meets, dirty diapers thrown under bushes on front lawns, and just fast food bags and things of that nature, you know, shoved under the car. So it was pretty persuasive for the City Council to see that, and that's why they designed this new permit parking designation. So here we are, another decade later, 2018, and the Weymouth Court residents have come back and requested that we enhance signage because folks are now parking on their street. And I think we kind of see this pattern where we might have had a group of folks who had their kids go through the system. They might have left, and we've got this whole new group of folks who are, you know, don't understand maybe the severity of the problem. So we're hearing from them every few years.
So just a couple of quick facts. Weymouth Court is directly across the street from the Aquatic Center. Like I said, the events, we know for a fact that the events and activities have increased over time. We know the student population has increased over time. Today, per the map that's included, there are two permit parking only signs at the entrance to Weymouth Court. These are larger signs. Our existing signs throughout the permit parking zone are the 12-inch by 18-inch, similar to the no parking signs you see anywhere in California. But the ones for Weymouth Court are actually, I believe they're 36 inches by 24 inches. So we made them extra large and just put two because we figure it's a court, it's a short court, you'll get the notice before you enter. There are also seven stencils on the curb along Weymouth Court, typical throughout the permit parking zone, that simply say permit parking, and it's just supposed to complement the signs. I have some pictures to show you a little further on. So the request that accompanies the petition is to lower, reposition, or relocate the existing signs at the front entrance. So the claim is that, you know, when you're driving in as a motorist, you're so concerned with hunting for that parking spot that you are not looking up to the signs. However, our signs, I went out there and checked them, they meet what we call our manual on uniform traffic control devices, MUTCD requirement, which is that we have to keep a 7-foot clearance under the sign for safe walking. So we can't lower the sign anymore, and the sign is pretty big. The second thing they've said is to add permit parking signs to the back of the existing, so make them double-sided, and also install additional signs throughout the court. Again, the discussion here is that, you know, if you're so concerned with trying to hunt for a spot and you missed the sign at the entrance, there's nothing else to inform you. And you might just park your car and walk out of the court and you never look back to read, you know, what's back there. So making them double-sided, adding a few more might enhance that. And then the third thing is to improve the curb markings. There are seven right now. I'll show you where they are on the map. And they're asking for a few more. So action items, what have we done in the month or so that we've had this request? We have requested an increase in police enforcement. As you all know, education, engineering, enforcement, it all goes hand in hand. So we can put up as many signs as we want, but unless it's being enforced, we breed disrespect. So we have asked Sergeant Webb to really amp up enforcement and then also provide us feedback so we can share with you in terms of how many violations and what is perception versus reality in terms of what's happening out there. We also distributed the map and flyer through the Santa Mona Aquatic Center and California High School to all user groups. Again, we just need to, I think, blast them and get the message out. Might be just a new set of parents who don't understand how sensitive of an issue this is.
And then I just have one comment. Our Aquatic Center staff, actually, they are encouraging more of the regional swim meets to take place at Derby Valley High School versus California High School, because at Derby Valley, you have an 800-space parking lot that can accommodate larger regional meets versus Santa Cal High, which has a smaller parking lot. And what we have found is a lot of these regional meets, when parents arrive, they don't want to go to the back of the parking lot at Cal High. They just park at the very first parking spaces along Broadmoor or in Weymouth Court. So our Aquatic Center staff is really pushing those regional meets to Derby Valley High School.
Are there sufficient spots in Cal High that just aren't being used? Or
they have nearly 600
parking, 600 parking spaces.
As you said, they just don't feel like going.
But
back.
It's at the back of the school.
Okay.
It could it be? Is it primarily during the meets, like visitors coming from different cities and stuff like that?
That's when they experience the worst of it. Mm-hmm. But as you'll see, she's the original petitioner has asked to read something into the record tonight, and she said even with something as simple as water polo, they've got 9 cars parked on their street on a Tuesday night.
And those are, you think there could be visitors or it could be ceremony residents? Okay.
Yeah.
How's it enforced? Are they towed or giving parking tickets?
No, they're given a parking citation.
What is second like best place to live in California?
It's a $100 parking citation.
Today? Yeah.
And we actually increased that back in 2006. Mm-hmm. The parking citation used to only be $30.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually had
$30 for those
paid parking. We did. We had folks tell our police officers that's parking in San Francisco, mm-hmm. or that's parking at a game. I've got to go watch my kid play.
That's parking at a
Just leave the ticket on the windshield.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
our officers.
It's $50.
Yeah, so our officers actually brought that to the city council and said, at minimum, let's make it $100 because folks
good.
Are just...
That'll hit them hard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so it is, it's now been increased to $100. Okay. But it's a citation. We only have one tow away zone, which we brought to the TAC about 10 years ago. That's Boone Acres Park, so Westwood Avenue. And that was because that's where we had most of this happening. Folks were attending games at Pine Valley Middle School and using the back entrance, and were leaving their vehicles in what we determined to finally be a fire lane, so it couldn't even accommodate the parking and two-way traffic. So we ended up creating the first tow-away zone, but that's the only tow-away zone.
Is there event parking signs on days of meets?
Yes.
Pointing?
They have sandwich boards. There's a full plan through the Aquatic mm-hmm. Center that they put out, including, you know, sometimes even having to barricade Weymouth Court, which they have done when it was really bad back in 2006 when this was brought to us. So they would even close off Weymouth Court.
I think the proposed plan is reasonable.
Yeah, so just a few. Okay, so here we are. So recommendations. Sorry, Nolan, just want to go over this before I open it to your discussion. So staff was recommending installing one new sign at the end of the court, and then installing two additional stencils on a pretty lengthy section of curb, and then trimming the trees to increase the visibility of the existing signs, continuing with the enforcement efforts, and continuing to regularly, you know, provide notices to user groups. The resident petition requests that we relocate the existing signs, which, as I told you, you'll see from the pictures, I don't think that one makes sense. Making the existing signs double-sided, that's possible for one of the signs, but the other one is on the back of a stop sign, so there's no opportunity for that one. Adding additional signs near the first four homes. Their complaint states that the folks who really experience it are the first four set of homes, because, you know, people park and run to the Aquatic Center or wherever it might be. So when I had told her that we would like to install one new sign at the end of the court, she said that's a good idea, it's a good start, but that's not going to take care of the folks who just make a multiple, you know, 5-point turn in front of her home and park their car. She said a lot of them don't even bother driving to the end of the court. And then they asked for additional stencils. So here is the location. Which is the point? The entrance signs are right there, those two. The red little stencils or locations show you where the stencils are today. The two yellow is where I'm proposing adding additional stencils, because we have this whole section with no stencil, and then we have this entire section with no stencil. And then this yellow dot would be the proposed new sign. So what they are asking for in addition to this is that we make these two signs double-sided. So if you just came in, didn't see those signs, parked your car, as you're walking out, it would be kind of glaring you in the face versus right now it is not. This one we could not do because it's actually a stop sign. This one we could possibly do if the TAC wants to go in that direction. So here are the two signs at the entrance to the court. Again, they're about 3 times the size in terms of length of existing no parking signs. We can't lower them because MUTC requires 7-foot clearance. But we can try to trim some of the trees. Maybe it'll improve the visibility. Though trees aren't exactly blocking the signs, but maybe they'll enhance the reflectivity of them. This is the end of the court. That's this post that we're proposing to install the additional sign on. We do think that it's kind of validated because you go to the end, you make a U-turn. That's what most people would do. If you look at this is the entrance to the court. So there's the one sign and there's the second sign. So this is kind of turning into it. But again, you know, would we really make every sign the size of a billboard? No, we do put some responsibility on a driver to read a sign before they enter a court. So I just don't recommend making them larger. They're already larger. This is what a typical sign looks like, 12 inch by 18 inch. So that one is already, you know, much, much larger. It's actually 3 of those signs. And I think that's it.
Is there any lights in front when you first pull in? You missed that sign in the nighttime?
Well, there are new retro-reflective, so they're extremely reflective signs.
Is there any reason why, there's code or something like that, where you can't paint the poles red, where it's more obvious to see something right now, the gray, I'm not sure that matters or not.
So we have reflective taping that we've used on some of our stop sign out at Bayberry View Lane.
I don't know if there's something.
A disco ball on top? No, I know what you mean. There is reflective taping that we can use.
Get out.
So looking at these pictures, I don't see that many people park there. Like, is there a complaint that they can't park right in front of their house, or they can't fine parking at all.
Yeah, I mean, I went midday in that one. So let me just, if you don't mind, I'm going to read what she specifically asked me to read this. She couldn't make it today. As a community, we would like the three requests honored as stated in our letter. We do not agree with the fueled person that visited our court. That I use the universal we when I talk to them. So she was like, whoever this idiot was. And I'm just like,
like, that would be me, thank you.
She's like, I will let that person know. She said, all the surrounding streets, Broadmoor, St. Denis, Devona, Newport, Millbridge, have an abundance of street curb paintings, one for each house, and more signs and posts in their ground in front of their homes. I can provide photos of our surrounding streets if needed. In addition, if the field person recommended one street sign at the end of the court and the light post would be sufficient, we disagree. Perhaps in addition to our request, but not as the sole solution. The first four houses on each side of the court are impacted the most. I personally live in the third house on the right. My parents bought this home in 1967, and my parents are now retired and living in Sunny Glen, but I've moved in here with my children. I have called this house home since 1971, before the high school was built, which is when my parents bought the land and the house and were told the high school would be built over by Athen Downs Park. But due to earthquake fault lines, they decided to move the location of the high school in front of our court. The entire neighborhood protested the high school being built in the middle of a community. They feared future growth would severely impact our surrounding streets, which in 47 years has. Traffic and parking remain an ongoing issue. She's asked residents of Weymouth Court, we ask that the city continue to provide support for the residents that live in the surrounding streets, the streets that are highly impacted by the location of the high school. Providing Weymouth Court with ample curb paintings and proper signage would be very much appreciated. And then she added one more item. She said, a perfect example is last Thursday, September 13th, there was a water polo game at the high school. Due to that event, there were 9 cars parked within the first 3 houses, parking on both sides of the court. The cars were parked there before 5 p.m. Our parking restriction is through 7 p.m. Between the high school events and the pool use, we are impacted on a daily basis. This problem has a very simple solution. Add signs to the back of the current signs and paint the curbs. We hope the committee agrees and will honor our request. Michelle Pelkey.
How much does it cost to paint the curbs?
So the curb painting is pretty minimal.
$2 a foot?
Yeah. And we probably, you know, go back and redo it maybe once every 5 to 10 years. That's not a big one.
Can
you go back to that? Can you go back to that picture, the map where you have the curve?
So has the residents thought about funding some of this?
We so as a city as a whole, we have floated the idea of a cost recovery program where we have residents pay into certain things like this, where maybe our traffic engineering group disagrees, but the residents really want it so they can pay for that red curb or that sign. But then we just thought that we might get to a place where, you know, a street that can't afford it says, well, you know, it's not equitable, or you're double dipping now because we pay taxes. There are a lot of reasons why our policy committee kind of shied away from pulling that forward. So right now we wouldn't ask them to pay for or share the cost. The cost part is not a big discussion
item.
It's
minimal,
you know, we get our signs for probably about $50. The stencil, like we said, you know, $4. It's like a 2-foot long section. It was really just, you know, we don't like sign clutter as a city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's the next discussion.
Yeah.
Now our streets
okay.
Colored.
I think any clutter would, usually it's the residents who don't like it, but they obviously rather have the clutter.
Yeah, it's like, then you have to think aesthetic.
Don't like the sign,
right?
They're okay with it. It's their home. It's their street.
I think what you suggest is
they want to put up.
Yeah. I think what you suggest is a good incremental approach. I
mean,
maybe add the one to the back.
Right.
I think it's a good incremental approach.
If nobody, I mean, no residents have objected.
They all signed the petition, right? Every homeowner signed it. Every homeower signed the petition.
Hey, why don't you put in front of each one of these houses, just put another stencil so that they're like. You know, like, this is not a driveway, put one here, but just going out and spray painting it and just make them happy.
Okay. How is the committee on adding? Right now we're proposing 2. We could try kind of that incremental approach, like you're saying, Phil, where we can start off with the 2 and then come back to it. What do you, no?
Why do I mean, we have the painting. If it's minimal, just
it is.
Cost. We're talking like $4 on material cost per section. So you're gonna be out there, just go ahead and spread paint.
It's gonna cost you more to go back and forth.
That is true. And then put one sign up on the back of the one that you can. The other's a stop sign. You can't.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is two new signs. One at the end of the court. One to make the entry one double sided, and then stencil one in front of each home.
Okay.
I mean that makes you meet them more than halfway.
No. That's pretty much the only thing we're not doing is repositioning the front signs, which
and we can't do.
Which we can't do.
Although it's not going to help, but at least they'll be happy, right?
Yeah, if it's an enforcement thing.
Yeah. Right.
I'm amazed you have a resident who has been there since 1971.
I mean, to be honest, if I lived in the court, I'd have an own, my own stencil that I'd be passing around to my neighbors. I'm just saying.
Now we know. We know where you live, Jeannie.
Okay. No, that's great. I appreciate the...
I mean, the worst case is you cone off the cul-de-sac during events and
There's so many events, though.
Well, the local residents. I mean,
14
residents.
Yeah. Do they call police sometimes?
We've asked them to. So what she wrote in your in the petition is one of our PSTs who has since left the city of San Ramon was actually the one suggesting install additional signs. So we've had a discussion with our police lieutenant and sergeant, letting them know that. You know, please enforce it with what's up there.
Is there a legal limit?
So they can't.
They can call and they go out there, maybe.
Yep. So we've asked Sergeant Webb, and he's taken this on personally. He even asked for specifically which home the petitioner is from, so he can make sure they know he's out there. So we are working on it from that end.
Send him a schedule of all the events too for Cal.
Is there a legal limit? How much you could fine a violator? I wonder if you sometimes signs can try to scare you by saying $500 fine on.
Yeah, I don't think we can do that.
Yeah, it needs to be consistent with what's in your vehicle. Yeah, so, okay, well, that'd be great, but
great. We can put up a fake sign, I guess, just a deterrent. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. And item 5.2, active residential traffic calming program.
Bill, can you pass me? I didn't print that.
I think it's just the Marsh Drive update. Mm-hmm.
So just a quick update on Marsh Drive. Our resident, Mr. Ropchen, so the original request we received, he's on Marsh Drive, the segment between Norris Canyon and Bollinger Canyon. So he gets a lot of the traffic going to Bollinger Canyon Elementary School during school bell times. And Mr. Ropchen, I don't know if you've been down that roadway, but he will stand out there with a poster board that tells you to slow down. And it got to a point where other San Ramon residents were getting upset with this man waving a sign, so he got into confrontation with a couple of drivers. And he had a mom who, he says, dropped her child off at Bollinger Canyon, came back, and then started revving her engine in front. At that point, Mr. Ropchen decided it was time to contact Ghostbusters or City of San Ramon, so we have intervened. We have put up the radar sign a couple of times. The data is right there for you to view. We have had Sergeant Webb go out there, and he has met with Mr. Ropchen personally just to kind of go over perception versus reality. And I've, on two different occasions, had very lengthy discussions with the resident and told him that he should really leave speed enforcement up to the city and kind of pull back from going out into the street. When Sergeant Webb was out there, he actually had another person stop and say, you know, yeah, there's this, you know, person that lives on the street, crazy guy, he jumps into the middle of the street with the sign. So when Sergeant Webb heard that, he was even more concerned that this resident is actually stepping into the way of traffic to slow people down. So obviously it's a very serious concern for the resident, but we want to kind of pull him back and let us deal with the issue. So we've tried. One of the things Mr. Ropchen asked for was additional speed humps. But as you know, there are guidelines for how many speed humps we can install. There are three on that street, and we do not believe from an engineering standpoint we should add any more. We checked the specifications of the speed humps. They still meet specs, so there's no need to go there and raise the height. According to the data, the average daily traffic volume is under 500, and 500 is kind of the general plan threshold to what we like to see on local streets. The average speed is 21, and the 85th is 29. So overall, pretty healthy. I mean, it's a street with speed humps. So I think a lot of this might have been aggravated by the fact that the resident was out there with the signs. So maybe there were people who, as we know, were trying to almost tease him and might have artificially shown him, you know, we're speeding. But overall, from our data, we don't have anything that would tell us to move forward with any other step. So we are going to close this request, or we have tried to. But Mr. Roachin is a very persuasive person, so every time I call to tell him we're going to close it, I get talked into leaving the sign out there for a little bit longer. But it is going to be officially closed, and we're going to continue to just have Sergeant Webb monitor and check in on it. But that is it. That's the update. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we're on item 6, committee member items. 6-1.
I do have something I'd just like to share. With the ICS and the Bishop Ranch presentation, I may even think of this if I get this thing to work. In June, I attended an event at the MTC, the first of the Horizon Initiative perspective papers on autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. This is on their website, MTC, just search Horizon. Their next presentation is actually next Wednesday in San Jose. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go to that one. It's at WeWorks Valley Towers, the 26th from 6 to 8. It's entitled Toward a Shared Future Strategies to Reduce Congestion. But that same day, they will release another perspective paper on that topic on their websites. It's pretty interesting stuff. I wanted to share that with the group.
Thank you. And that autonomous vehicle report, when I was reading it, they highlight the Gomentum program in Concord, but they don't specifically talk about the autonomous shuttle at Bishop Ranch. But they talk about the Dublin one.
Right.
So I was a little insulted by that.
In the picture, there's a picture of
there's
the one
There's a picture
Bishop
of
Ranch.
It,
yeah.
But they don't talk about the Bishop Ranch one, right.
But it's interesting stuff. So.
Yeah, it is a good report. Thanks, Billy, for bringing that to our attention.
All right. 6-2, City Council and Liaison. 6-3, Planning Commission.
The only thing I have is we're working on a general plan amendment to integrate the results of the citywide retail study that we did to try to retain retail sales tax within the city. So we're working on that. And we just had a joint meeting with the City Council to kick off an update to the Crow Canyon specific plan. Mm-hmm. So that's underway as well. Mm-hmm. And then I have two things that I want to bring to staff's attention. One is on Santa Ramon Valley Boulevard down by, I think it's what's it called now, Brave Church?
Right.
In the fast lane, there's a hole that was repaired and now it's failing again. It's right up close to the center divide.
Okay.
You'll see it. You can't miss it. And then also, I know this is the Caltrans Park and Ride at the crosswalk where a residents would cross at the entrance of the park and ride.
The
one
Bollinger
curb
Park
has
and
been
Ride
painted red as cars exit the park and ride there on Bollinger, but the curb going in, so that the west curb is not painted red.
Okay.
The cars are parking, so the tail ends are into the crosswalk. So that curb needs to be painted red to, one, allow for visibility, and then also safety for pedestrians, I think.
Thanks, Jeannie. That's a really good point. We actually have been meeting with Caltrans about that park and ride lot. In fact, we have a follow-up meeting with them in mid-October. I can't remember the date now, but we're looking at trying to locate additional park and ride lots in this corridor because that is overflowing. And then also Facebook, Genentech, Nextdoor, those high-tech companies, they have these large commuter buses, and those employees are parking in that lot. They're also parking at Memorial Park, so those companies are trying to locate alternate parking as well so we can reduce the number of people in those lots. Because also at the Bollinger Park and Ride lot, they're encroaching into that shopping center as well. And so the property manager at the shopping center has had discussions with some of those commuters.
And, you know, I could see them starting to park into the neighborhoods down San Ramon Valley Boulevard and be standing at the bus stops, you know, and waiting, because the bus today I saw was headed down San Rafael Boulevard and got on at Acosta.
Right. Yeah.
And so I could just see, you know, there's a need. I don't know where they're going to go to park and ride in that corridor.
But there are like five churches down that corridor that have empty parking lots during that.
I know. I mean, you can see like Church on the Hill that I just spoke about. I don't know how empty that lot is. Oh my gosh, the city could actually rent out parking spaces by the Glass House and charge.
That dirt lot at the farm?
Yeah. Huh?
The dirt lot at the farm? Yeah. Rented out.
There you go.
That's all that I have. Right.
Thanks, Jeannie.
Thank you. 6-4? Any?
No.
Nothing? Okay. And 6-5? Teen council.
We have our new teen council. Yeah, we have our new liaison here.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Oh, I'm Danielle. I'm a freshman at Cal High right now. And this is also my first year in teen council.
She's here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. We went for a long time without a representative.
Would you report back to your group to let their parents know not to use Lima?
Majority, not Cal High. But I'll tell those.
Tell them you want the regional swim meets at your high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can park near a school's neighborhood.
No.
You go to Doherty or Cal High?
Cal.
What did you say about Doherty?
Most of the folks on the liaison committee.
Yeah, they're at Doherty Valley High School. Yeah. There's only a few Cal High representatives.
And did you help out this weekend with Rotary?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. You did a great job. You volunteered your time. Thank you for that.
That's our name.
The Hop Fest?
Yeah, the Hop Fest.
All right.
Well, really
nice event. Yeah. It was fun, yeah.
Good times. There's nothing else. Then the meeting is adjourned.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You guys, good meeting.
Good stuff. So she'll report back and forth.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Nolan. We'll get your name fixed. C-H-A-N, then, right?
Nolan.
Well, it's fine on the agenda. So.
Yeah. Okay. Just in the minutes.
Just in the minutes.
Okay.
One meeting, and that's the longest meeting.
I know. I'm thinking.
See, Joy, I know. He needs to facilitate it, right? Bye. Thank you. Bye, Bob. See you later.
I gotta keep it faster.